morning, everybody. I'd like to call the Senate Finance Committee to order. 14 minutes, I think, after 9. Is that the correct time by your computer?
17.
Okay. We're both closer than that, our antique clock. Which, by the way, we forgot to put in the capital budget to get fixed. So we'll work on that. Might have a little amendment, maybe. It's April 7th, 2008. With me today is Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Elton, Senator Thomas, and Senator Dyson. We have three bills on the agenda this morning. We're going to start off with Senate Bill 231, Low Income Housing for the Homeless. We'll go on to House Bill 419, State Lease Purchase Agreements, and that'll be the first hearing on this one. And then House Bill 319, Dentists and Dental Assistance. We're going to start off with Senate Bill 231, Low Income Housing for the Homeless. This is the second hearing on this bill. We heard this bill for the first time February 19th. And after taking additional testimony, I'd like to have the will of the committee. We have Dr. Jess Jesse, if you can come forward. There was several senators that had concerns with this bill or questions, and I was just wondering if you can recall that far back and if you have any comments on those.
Senator Stedman, for the record, my name is Jeff Jesse. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And there were a number of issues raised by different members of the committee. AHFC, Brian Butcher is here, prepared responses to those, got them back to the committee members. We didn't hear any follow-up from that, so we're hopeful that we've addressed those issues adequately. Brian, do you want to?
Sums it up.
There's an email in our packet from Mark Romick from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation in your packet that answers or responds to some of these questions. There's a $10 million capital expenditure for 09 attached to the legislation. And the appropriation is in Senate Bill 222 as a reminder in the mental health budget. $2.5 million comes from each of four sources. The general fund, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the Mental Health Trust Authority, and private sources. And Mr. Jesse, could you kind of remind us the position of the Mental Health Trust Board and their thoughts for the several years concerning this subject?
Yes, Senator Stedman. The trustees have worked very diligently on these housing issues for a number of years. We've invested already probably $3 to $4 million over the last few years in trying to develop evidence-based practices, pilot projects. One of the concerns that the trust has heard this year on both sides of the legislature is that the mental health trust needs to step up and provide more ongoing support for some of these initiatives. And I've discussed this with a number of the trustees, and I believe that the trust is willing to stay in this project for at least 5 years at the $2.5 million level. So that would be a $12.5 million commitment, which to date would be by far and away the largest single commitment the Mental Health Trust has made for any particular initiative.
Okay. Do we have any questions for the with that, we'll go to Pat Luby, AARP in Anchorage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP in Alaska. AARP strongly supports Senate Bill 231, which would establish an Alaska Housing Trust. There's a stereotype that the homeless are inebriates who choose to live on the streets. But bad things and bad luck happen to people and to families that may cause homelessness. Many older persons, especially renters, are burdened with housing expenses. A run of bad luck with high health care costs or even higher than expected utility costs may change someone's status from a renter to homeless. ARP has tracked the number of grandparents raising grandchildren in Alaska. Grandparents don't expect nor plan on raising their grandchildren. The additional expenses and bills related to grandchildren can take a renter into a homeless category. But most of our homeless are children. Research tells us about the different circumstances faced by homeless children who experience poorer health and may have to change schools, often more than once in a school year. AARP is the world's largest organization of grandparents. We don't want to see anyone's grandchild homeless. SB 231 won't solve our homeless problem, but it will help as we try to resolve this situation for our fellow citizens, especially those little citizens. We can do better. Senate Bill 231 will help us get there. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. We have nobody signed up in the audience to speak on this, and again, we've had a public hearing on this previous. We have any questions, final questions or concerns from committee members? We have a will of the committee, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Finance Committee pass out CS for Senate Bill 231 Hess with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
We have a motion to move the bill from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee to the next committee or referral.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We'll go on now to the next bill, House Bill 419, State Lease Purchase Agreements. This is the first hearing in the Senate on this bill. The intent here is to adopt a CS and hear from the sponsor, take public testimony. Let's just have a brief Eddie's. Record, we are going to go out of sequence here. We'll back up a little bit. We're going to go on to the House Bill 319. We're waiting for the arrival of some folks on that other bill. House Bill 319, Dennis Dental Assistance. This is the first hearing in the Senate Finance Committee concerning this bill. The intent today is to hear from the sponsor, take public testimony, and see the will of the committee. And here to present the bill, Representative Ramirez. Representative Ramirez, if you want to walk us through the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee. It's a pleasure to be here before you this morning. I'll be brief. This is a fine bill that continues the responsible exporting of dentistry across the state of Alaska. It's particularly beneficial to rural Alaska. We all know that oral hygiene is critical and contributes very directly to the health and the nutritional benefits that are enjoyed by people that can eat food. And with that, I'll let Jane Pearson take you through the specifics of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. You can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent, please.
For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Jay Ramirez, and I thank the committee for the opportunity to present this bill, House Bill 319. Oral health plays a key role in overall health, and unfortunately not all Alaskans enjoy good dental health due to geological barriers, cost of dental care, and limitations on dental personnel. HB 319 follows the provisions allowing for expanded duties of dental hygienists and dental assistants. It improves access to dental care and reduces the cost for dental care. With the expanded duties, dental hygienists, dental assistants, and dentists can provide greater access and more cost-effective care. The bill specifically lays out the framework for expanding dental assistants' duties for two specific procedures. It would allow a certified dental assistant under a dentist's direct supervision to place fillings into a cavity that has been prepared by a dentist, and allows a certified dental assistant under a dentist's direct supervision to polish teeth that are already clean of tartar. These expanded duties are already permitted in 36 other states. Included in this bill are the dentist hygienist scope of practice and the ability to obtain a restorative function endorsement, permitting placement of a filling into a cavity prepared by a dentist, and to perform the activities authorized under a collaborative agreement with a licensed dentist. This will authorize a licensed dental hygienist to administer local anesthesia and under general supervision of a licensed dentist. This is already done in 16 other states across the U.S. This bill will authorize the dental board to approve the collaborative agreement. It applies supervision requirements to a dental hygienist operation in conjunction with a licensed dentist under the collaborative agreement. Dental assistants who perform expanded duties of packing cavities or polishing teeth will have to pass a training program and an exam prior to becoming eligible for this certification. It'll be done through the Alaska Dental Board. Furthermore, supervising dentists must personally authorize the procedure and examine the patient afterwards. The bill is supported by the Alaska Dental Society, the Alaska Board of Dental Examiners, the Alaska State Dental Hygienist Association, the Alaska Dental Outreach Consortium, and the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. So all the key players have come together on this bill at this point. And once again, oral health plays a key role in overall health, and untended dental problems create all sorts of problems like pain, affect nutrition, influence the quality of life. So this bill hopefully will make it easier for people to access a dentist and make it more efficient for the dental industry. So this bill is supported by everybody, the hygienists, the dentists, and the assistants. So I thank the committee for the bill, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
So then my understanding of this bill, that it'll improve the lack of dental services in rural Alaska, is that not correct?
I do believe it will have a good influence in both rural and urban Alaska, because it will expand the practices that can be done by both assistants and hygienists, so the access should be better.
So is there any groups that oppose this that you're aware of?
There are no groups that I've heard of at this point that oppose this bill.
Okay. Do we have any questions from the committee members before we take public testimony? Senator Thomas. Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your bringing this bill forward, and I'm glad that it got merged into one that did that was helpful. I believe might have seemed like a struggle, but it was good. It not only expands that ability in the villages and the rural areas, but it also, I think, leads to a career track for some of those folks that will now find that there's more of an opportunity to move forward. So I think it's a step forward, and there was no opposition in the committees that I was into to either of the bills that were merged here. So appreciate it.
Right. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question is what general supervision means. I see in the bill it talks about direct supervision, and it talks about indirect supervision, but it doesn't talk about general supervision.
Senator Huggins, through the chair, general supervision would be supervision where a dentist did not have to be present or directly oversee the procedure. And I think that probably can be answered better by some of the witnesses that are online.
Okay. No, that's fine. I just wanted to. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, it's a very concerning bill because now you're allowing non-dental school graduates to go ahead and administer things like anesthesia. But I was wondering, more on a basic level, you're talking about dental hygienists. How many dental hygienists do you have out in rural Alaska?
Senator Olson, I really couldn't tell you that, but I'm sure the Hygienist Society could. Okay. And they should be online.
Is there anybody online for the Alaska Dental Hygienist Association?
Well, I have a whole list, so we'll go down there in a minute.
Okay, maybe I have a couple more questions from the sponsor, if I could. As I look at this bill and I see the dentist's direct supervision, what does that mean? I mean, does it mean that the dentist is already there in the room as the hygienist is actually injecting medication into the gingival area?
Senator Olson, through the chair, that is correct.
And the last thing is, how many times in the recent past, in the last 5 years, has there been a problem with local anesthesia being administered where you've had a questionable or a bad outcome, where either you've got an infection from it, or that you've got from the injection of the syringe going into obviously a non-sterile area like the mouth, or that you've had an injection of the anesthesia into a vein where you had systemic effects from a local anesthesia?
Senator Olson, I don't think I could accurately answer that question, but having done medical malpractice, I do know it does occur.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, we'll go to the off-net. I'd like to try to keep the testimony to about 2 minutes, if I could, so we can work through the list. With that, I'd like to start with Pete Higgins. Dr. Higgins, most likely, if you're online.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. First, I'd like to testify that...
Could you identify yourself for the record and who you represent,
please? We obviously
please?
Need this bill in the rural areas. It would help when the dentists go out to the villages to be able to access more patients than what they're seeing.
Mr. Higgins, could you identify yourself for the record and who you represent before you start your testimony?
Oh, I'm sure. Sorry about that. Pete Higgins. I'm the president of the Alaska Dental Society this year. I represent the... most of the dentists, I believe, in the state, we all are on board with this bill. It would certainly help, like I was telling you earlier, when we go out into the rural areas to be able to access more patients. We also will hope that it will help dentists in, the major cities take on Medicaid a little bit better, be able to see more Medicaid patients as we go. I was listening to one of you guys on the, I'm not sure who asked the question about hygienists and giving anesthetic. Currently, the hygienist can give anesthetic now if they pass their test. The dental assistants will not be doing that in this bill. So that is not a concern at this point. Right now, what our concern is the access to patients and whether or not we can be able to see more. And especially in the rural areas, especially when it comes to cleanings and maintenance and preventive work. And that's the purpose behind this bill. It's a needed bill. It's been, other states have done this. We're behind the power curve on this a little bit. We want to bring our state up to speed with everybody else. And like I said, it's a good bill, and it needs to get through, so I'll keep my testimony short. I'll just listen in from here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We're going now to Dr. David Etchler, and if you could please identify yourself and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Eichler. This is Dr. Dave Eichler, the president of the board of Alaska Dental Examiners, and I was just online to answer questions.
Okay, thank you. We'll go on to the next person on the list. Roy Ann Royer, if you can identify yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Sure. I'm Roy Ann Royer from Chugiak, Alaska, just representing myself. But I'm going to give you my background just to let you know that I have had significant experience in the dental profession, have worn many hats throughout the years in dentistry. I've been a hygienist for 30 years. I've worked in private practice. I've been an instructor at UAA dental programs for over 20 years. I teach and work clinically in the public health at the Alaska Native Medical Center. I travel to villages to do dentistry. I've been I am currently an examiner for the Western Regional Exam Board. I'm a previous member of the Alaska State Dental Board, and I consult in many other areas. Probably the most important thing at this point is that I worked as an expanded functions dental assistant and dental hygienist early in my career in Washington State. So I know that the functions that we're advocating here are valid and really do actually work in the profession. And it's been well documented, as we've said, that Alaska is a state in need of increased access to dental services, especially in the rural areas. And these expanded functions really will increase the number of people that could be treated, and it will be while working and collaborating with the dentist. So I'm confident that expanding the scope of practice for dental assistants and hygienists really will result in improved access to care. And as others have stated, these are practiced in many other states throughout the country and have been proven successful. So I am in support of HB 319, and I hope that you'll see the benefits of this bill. And I ask that you approve HB 319. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. We'll go on now to Gail Walden. If you can identify yourself and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Yes, thank you, and good morning. My name is Gail Walden, and I am a licensed dental hygienist from Wasilla. I just am here representing myself, but I am a member and officer of the Alaska State Dental Hygienist Association, and I am in support of House Bill 319. I think that a lot has already been covered, and at this point, I would be happy to just kind of give you a little bit of information on how long hygienists, because it came up, have been doing anesthesia in Alaska, and it has been since July of 1981. There has never been any disciplinary action taken against the hygienist due to the administration of local anesthetic. And that's, I mean, I think that covers kind of the main concerns there, but I would be happy to answer any other questions related to that and just state that this would help to create a more effective healthcare delivery system and would provide more time and cost-effective dental care options. And I think, like I said, most of it has already been covered, but I would appreciate the committee hearing this bill today, and I hope that you guys will support House Bill 319. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. I'll now go on to David Logan. If you could identify yourself and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Logan. I'm a dentist here in Juneau, Alaska, and I'm representing the Alaska Dental Society. I'm the legislative chair for the Alaska Dental Society. I think the Representative Ramirez and Jane did a very good job in describing the particulars of the bill, and the previous witnesses have done a nice job in advocating for the bill. I'd just like to say from the Dental Society's position is we would like to see this bill be passed out of committee today. It's a good bill. It will help us provide more services out in the rural areas and also help in the underserved areas in Alaska. I will speak very briefly as to the differences in supervision since that came up. There is three types of supervision in the dental statutes, direct, indirect, and general. The difference is direct means that the dentist is in the facility, sees the patient before a procedure, sees the patient after the procedure. Indirect, a dentist has seen the patient before the procedure, does not necessarily see them after the procedure. In general, just means that the dentist has diagnosed the condition and is not in the facility at the time. And I would be happy to answer any questions that the committee has.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
We have one indeterminate fiscal note from DCCED in our packet. We have, or that concludes our off-net call-ins. We don't have anybody signed up in the audience, but this is the first time we've heard this bill, so if there's anybody that wants to come forward from the audience and make any comments on this bill, now is your time. Okay, we'll bring it back to the committee. If we have any other questions for the bill sponsor? Closing comments from the bill sponsor.
Mr. Chairman, in particular, through the chair, Senator Olson, Dr. Olson, I think that although any medical or dental procedure is fraught with some element of risk, I think that the intent of this bill is to do no harm first and to emulate some of the programs that are sprouting up across the country and over the world where there is the opportunity under appropriate medical supervision, even if it's a bit dilutive, to provide more services to more people, and you know better than anyone at this table how difficult it is to export those services to the furthest corners of our state and our people, and that is the intention behind this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson, do we have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we move House Bill 319 out of Senate Finance with individual recommendations and in the accompanying fiscal note.
Okay, we have a motion on the table to move Senate CS for CS and House Bill 319, version T, with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations. Do we have objection? Seeing no objection, we'll go ahead and move the bill from committee to the next committee of referral.
Thank you.
Good job.
We are now, might want to, hearing a little echo, you might want to drop the volume a little bit. We're now going to take up House Bill 419, State Lease Purchase Agreements. This is the first hearing on this bill. The, in, The intent here is to adopt the CS and hear from the sponsor, take public testimony, and then we'll set this bill aside. And if we, Senator Huggins, if we can have a motion to adopt CS version all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that CS for CS for House Bill 419 version Oscar be moved for the committee.
I can't hear you. Could you please repeat that?
Yes, I move that Senate CS for CS for House Bill 419 version Oscar be brought before the committee.
Okay, we have a motion on the table to bring version O as our working document. We have objection. We have objection from Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. It appears at first glance to me that the committee substitutes has some significant changes in it, and I'd just like to have an explanation of those changes.
Okay, if we could go to the bill sponsor, and we have objections, so if you could kind of speak to the CS, please.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Tom Wright. I'm staff to Representative Chenault. This bill is introduced by the House Finance Committee. What you have before you in the CS is the original bill, the bill that was originally introduced in House Finance. And basically, what this bill does is does not allow any agency or agencies that are already allowed to do lease purchases. It prohibits them from doing any lease purchases.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. With the understanding that this is now back to the original bill, I remove my objection.
Okay. Do we have any further objection to adopting version O? Seeing no further objection, version O is our working document. Mr. Wright, could you want to walk us through the bill, as this is the first time this bill has been before the committee, and enlighten us on what we're doing?
Mr. Chairman, when we in the House Finance Committee started getting into lease purchases, we found the master lease line of credit, and most of you, or hopefully you have those documents in front of you that show how the master lease line of credit was used. We had some concerns about its usage, and one of the items that was used for lease purchase was, of course, the jet by Governor Murkowski. There have been 29 separate lease purchases. In fact, the legislature last year authorized $68 million for the master lease line of credit, and it became problematic because there was no particular fund source for the master lease line of credit. And I think it was something that the legislature inadvertently did last year. There have been a number of items. I don't know if that list was provided or not, but there have been a number of items that have been used using the master lease line of credit. And I won't go over each and every detail, Mr. Chairman, but the thought was that this was going around the appropriation process. The legislature has the right to appropriate, and we were giving agencies somewhat that ability to appropriate and not, you know, not make requests through the capital budget. So that's what brought this to our attention, and that's why we came up with the original bill. The other concern that the House Finance Committee had was where these payments were showing up in the detail books. Some were, some weren't. And what use of funds or what funds were being used to pay for these master lease line of credit items, and who controlled the dollar amounts. That was the original intent of the bill, was to stop the master lease line of credit. And I can go into further explanation if you'd like, Mr. Chairman. I can discuss how we arrived at at the CS that we adopted, but I don't know if that's appropriate or not, since the CS is in front of us right now.
Well, maybe you could be tactful in the way you kind of work around that subject without hitting it directly. I think you could lay the information out a little bit, because clearly there'll be discussions, I would expect, on from some people that would like to have more discretionary control over the master line of credit than what this CS would allow.
And of course, Mr. Chairman, if I may, this bill, as it's written right now, does pertain to all master or lease purchase agreements. Any lease purchase agreement that an agency enters into, One of the problems we found is the statute in AS 3630085 was very broad and really didn't have a definition, you know, of what a lease purchase agreement was or how the departments were to use it. And quite honestly, there's only four agencies that were entitled to use it, but there was a AG's opinion, I believe, from 1987 that opened the door. The departments in 2001, some departments decided to take advantage of that AG opinion since the statute was so broad, and that's why we're at where we're at right now, is trying to get a handle on lease purchase agreements by the agencies. One of the things, and the agencies, you know, some of the agencies who are directly involved in this can, you know, probably answer some of the questions better than I and talk about some of the process, but one of the things that we wanted to have done and we discussed in the CS was to have some sort of control or some sort of reporting mechanism just to see what was being done in lease purchase. And that's why in the CS you find that there is a reporting requirement of any lease purchase over $100,000 within 10 days of awarding the contract. Notification has to be provided to both presiding officers and the finance chairs of both bodies. And then on or before January 15th of this year, we have requested that OMB compile a list of every lease purchase item that a department enters into and report that to the legislature. Those were some of the things that we were concerned about. We wanted to know how they're being paid for, you know, what agreements were out there. We wanted more information so we could make budget decisions when it came time to look at the operating budget and have that information in front of us.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I have maybe some of the same concerns as the chairman. At first glance, this seems pretty draconian, if I understand what we're doing. And did you say, and does this bill say, that these organizations would now be included in that, with the rest, almost all the rest of the state organization, and precluded from having leasing equipment?
Mr. Chairman, they could still lease equipment. They cannot enter into a lease purchase agreement. Whereas, you know, where they're going to lease something and maybe the end result is they're going to purchase it, they can't enter into those agreements. They can still enter into lease agreements, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dyson, you have a follow-up?
Yeah. So, yeah, and I'm sure all of us have seen some economic studies where, for instance, leasing computers makes a lot more sense than purchasing them, at least according to some of the economists. So am I correct in inferring that what you, where the problems are, is just when the leases can or do lead to purchases?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And our biggest objection in House Finance, or at least Representative Chenault's objection, was the use of the master lease line of credit and how it was being used, because quite frankly, there are no limitations on its use. There is no cap. You know, it's something that's beyond the legislature's purview, to be honest with you, except in the budgetary process where we see it show up, where agencies are buying, you know, large items or spending a lot of money on items. We really didn't want to get into where, for example, there are some instances where agencies, particularly Department of Administration, have to lease mail equipment because it's not available, you cannot purchase it. We didn't want to get into those types of items or the, you know, the real small items, but we did want an accounting.
Fred?
I think it's dawning on me here what the problem is. So what you're wanting to stop is departments purchasing equipment through the subterfuge of a lease purchase and therefore bypassing the kind of analysis that goes into capital projects.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
All right, thank you.
You said it a lot more succinctly than I, sir.
We were looking at language in the capital budget that we just released here several days ago to deal with this issue, but the House, the other body, had a different approach. so we decided that we would follow the other body's lead and go down the approach that they were working on. But we were gonna, we were also concerned on this side of the hall with this issue. We have other questions for the bill sponsor. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Although the department and the various agencies can still enter into to lease purchase agreements, but they have to be the ones bringing forth the lease, so it gets it away from this master lease aspect of things that was more the state's responsibility and more directly to their department when they bring forth their operating budget or something. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, under the committee substitute, there would be no lease purchase agreements. Again, you know, there's a lease provision in 3630.080, but as far as lease purchases are concerned, this would prohibit that practice.
Am I looking at the right version, version O?
Yes. Should be.
Mr. Chairman, and just to clarify, we're talking about equipment or what the legal term of personal property. We're not talking about real property itself, you know, buildings, land. That still is entitled under 3630.080, but not under the equipment and what is defined or what is stated in legalese as personal property. You cannot enter into a lease purchase agreement.
Correct. That is the distinction. Thank you.
So who controls the dollar amount available under this?
Mr. Chairman, as I stated previously, there really is no dollar amount under the master lease line of credit. You know, it depends what the state bond committee decides, you know, what they think the capabilities are, you know, to enter into these agreements.
And then how do their payments show up in the budgets that are presented to us? How does that work?
Mr. Chairman, you'd have to ask the agencies because that's one of the questions that we had. Some agencies do report, you know, on the detail books where they have entered into these agreements and how it's being purchased, but some agencies we've had a hard time trying to find some of these items.
And that, I would think, would create some concern.
That's why we introduced the original bill, Mr. Chairman, because there were concerns.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I have two questions. Can you give me an example of how the building improvements, how that's been abused?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if the building improvements has been abused or not. I guess beauty's in the eye of the beholder, Mr. Chairman. So I know that there is one purchase for carpeting of the state office building that was used under the master lease line of credit. And you have to have some collateral of some sort in order to do this or be able to take that item back. And after they did it, it's my understanding, and again, there's people who have more expertise and were involved in this issue, but it's my understanding that the agencies were told we're not going to do this thing, you know, do a type like this again because we cannot reclaim that carpet once it's laid. So that was one of the issues in building improvements. There has to be something that the company who enters into that can retain it if payments aren't made.
You have a follow-up, Senator Dyson? We're running out of time here, so.
Yeah, so, yeah, the real value of used carpet is pretty low. But I just make a note for all of us that the agencies may be using this process to subvert the capital projects process because of actions of the legislature. I visited a facility in Senator Huggins' district where they had a front-end loader that was old when I first started learning to use equipment, and they were scouring the junkyards of the West to find parts for it. And the reason that they were doing that is they were not able to convince their administration and us the need to get a new front-end loader. You know, the capital project process wasn't working. They couldn't sell getting a new loader, even though they just, same facility had a first generation alarm system, and they couldn't get the money from the capital projects to replace it. So, you know, they were spending more time on false alarms and maintenance than what one year of false alarms and maintenance work would have paid for a whole new system. So I agree with what I think we're trying to do here, but we also have to be responsible in giving these departments the equipment they need, even when we're trying to be tight-fisted. I'm done.
When we look back at this year's capital budget, the administration informed me that they roughly reduced the departmental's request by $1 billion before it hit our desk. We reduced the legislator's request by about $1.1 billion. So I didn't want the people at home to think that we're going to go down the road of meeting everybody's requests, because the treasury would soon be empty. I would like to go now to Mr. Jim Lynch on the off-net. Mr. Lynch, if you can identify yourself for the record and who you represent, please, and speak to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Jim Lynch, an Associate Vice President for Finance for the University of Alaska. I want to testify on this bill, but I will admit to being confused at this point as to which version of the bill is out there. What I thought we were looking at was one that requires reporting at $100,000 level on lease purchases to the legislature. I'm not aware that the bill contains something that says we cannot lease purchase, period. I just apologize to the committee. The reporting responsibilities, I have no objection to. I have some concerns about not having a floor on the reporting to the Office of Management and Budget, because this information is not captured within the accounting systems. Somebody has to go back and review individually all of these lease agreements just to determine, you know, things like what the terms are, and it's not always obvious what the financing rates are or the interest rates or how much is being, what the purchase price is on leases. So it can be complicated. I don't know how much work it will be, to be honest with you. We laud Representative Chenault's efforts to do something to create some accountability. And I actually look forward to working with them on some means of doing that. I'm not opposed to the bill in terms of what I understand it to be and of reporting. To just prohibit lease purchasing, I think, is onerous. And I apologize if that's what's in there. I do think that portion would be onerous. The ability to lease purchase something is another tool in a procurement officer's toolkit. I think it's something that's invaluable. Many times there just isn't time to go back and go through a capital request process for things. And I haven't seen anything that says there's any minimums out there at all where you're underneath some capitalization level. I guess they're just concerns at this point. I don't know what the bill really contains. I apologize for the confusion.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. That concludes our off-nets. We have another engagement coming up here in a few minutes. We are going to be setting this bill aside here for the time being. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to come forward and make some brief comments before we set this bill aside? I see no sign-up sheet. Is there any sign-up sheets? Okay. There's no one on the sign-up sheets, but we'll give you a couple minutes. If you can introduce yourself and who you represent for the record and speak to the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Ramon Henderson. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of General Services and Department of Administration. As I understand it, substitute bill amendment would, I'm looking at the first section one where it says Department, Board of Regents, Legislative Council, or the court system may not lease equipment or other personal property. If the intent then is to not allow departments to have the flexibility to lease equipment when necessary, then the Department of Administration would object to the bill. We think that the bill as amended in the House was with the reporting requirements is something that the departments and agencies could work with. But to totally prohibit the ability to lease purchase equipment would cause some operational problems.
Okay. Do we have any questions for the firm? Okay, thank you. Do we have anybody else that would like to come forward briefly before we set this bill aside? Okay, with that, do we have any closing comments from the committee members? There are two zero fiscal notes from the Department of Administration and the Governor's Office concerning this bill. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside for now. Unless members have any other comments, this concludes the agenda for today. We will meet tomorrow at 9 a.m. This meeting's, and we'll post a schedule later today. This meeting adjourned.